one constant through all the years, Ray. Baseball.
It's time to put on those oven mitts, because it's time to bring the heat with Christian Brown.
And welcome to Bring in the Heat. I'm your host, Christian Rao, and welcome back to another episode of 30 Teams in 30 Days. We're talking about the Boston Red Sox. We're talking with Terry Cushman Jr. Terry, how you doing? He is the podcaster, Red Sox podcaster for the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find him on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. Hey, Terry, how you doing, man?
Couldn't be better. You know, I kind of got a glimpse of my first spring training game today. It was nice to kind of hear the sounds. I hate Dave O'Brien, who's our lead commentator, but he's talking about baseball, so I guess that's a good thing. And looking forward to several more months of it.
You know, I was thinking that same thing in aspects of spring training the other day. I was watching, it was the first day of opening day, so it was the Nationals and the Cardinals. And Angel Hernandez was catching, and they were already ragging on Angel Hernandez. And I told myself, hey, at least we got a baseball game rolling on. At least we have the opportunity to be able to troll Angel Hernandez on social media. I'm just glad it's back. 162 is the goal this season. But last year, we only had 60 games, and that did not really fan out very well for your team at the Red Sox there. They did finish last in the AL East. That's a long time since that's happened. I got to hear your thoughts. What happened in 2020 with this team?
Well, what happened was Dave Dombrowski, like five seasons leading up to last season, and much like he did the Tigers, kind of left the team in bad shape. Not a good farm system. We were over the luxury tax coming into last year. We had to get under it to reset the penalties. And fortunately, we did that, but the cost that comes with it was our roster was not that good. And Chris Sale, as you know, recovering from Tommy John, and we were a last place team. And as depressing of a 60-game season as it was to just have that few games, it was a much shorter massacre for us Red Sox fans.
Oh, I definitely couldn't blame you there. You know, 60 games is probably, you know, a blessing in disguise for you guys. A short-lived first season without, obviously, the stud Mookie Betts that moves on to win a World Series with Los Angeles last season. I'm sure that hurts. I don't want to talk about it anymore with you. I don't want to rip that Band-Aid off anymore with you, Terry. But, you know, that is a big hit. But with that being said, there was big shoes to fill with that team. And, you know, there were some plus sides in 2020 for the Red Sox. There also were a few disappointments as well. I want to talk about Chris Sale in a little bit as we get down the wire here in this podcast for episode 4 of Bringing the Heat podcast. But I really want to know, what was your biggest surprise for 2020 for this team? And then what was your biggest disappointment?
I really like the way Tanner Houck pitched in his few starts right at the tail end of the season. The Red Sox haven't developed a top of the rotation pitcher since John Lester, who was drafted in 2002. So going on 20 years. So to finally have a guy like Houck come up was kind of a breath of fresh air. It was a nice glimpse towards the future. So that was fun. Nick Pivetta also had a couple good starts late in the year. We got him in the Brandon Workman trade with the Phillies at the deadline. So those were a couple pleasant surprises. And we didn't really know how Alex Verdugo was going to fare. I mean, you're kind of, in a way, filling the shoes of Mookie Betts, which is an impossible feat. But he kind of showed up, left his own impression, showed that he was his own player, and the power was there. We thought we were going to have trouble identifying a leadoff guy. He was kind of put into that role, thrived on it. So those are a few of the things that were positives throughout 2020.
The New York Yankees, obviously one of those big teams. I don't mean to bring up, that's like saying the word Michigan to an Ohio State fan, but the New York Yankees obviously are a you know, on the top of their mantle. A lot of people are thinking they might win the East this year. Arguably, the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry is not only the best rivalry in baseball, it's the best in all of sports. You know, even with the, you know, the Red Sox not as good last season, and there's still the up and up this year, is that rivalry changed?
Well, it doesn't quite have the intensity that it had in years prior. Even 2018 didn't seem to have the intensity that 2004 had when we had that, and even 2003, because we played them in the ALCS back-to-back. And the interesting thing about 2018 versus those two seasons earlier in the century, which is a messed up thing to say, you had social media this time. So there was a lot more room for, you know, mudslinging. And I kind of thought it was tame. And the Red Sox are kind of at the bottom working their way up. And depending on who you ask, I think the Yankees are kind of trending downwards. And you look at 2013, 2014, 2015, the Yankees kind of entered a purgatory, you know, being saddled down with the Rodriguez deal, the Teixeira deal. CC Sabathia wasn't very good at that point. And I think they're kind of headed that way again. They're already right under the luxury tax. The Cole deal, I think Gerrit Cole's probably a top two or three pitcher, if not the very best in Major League Baseball. So I can't say that that's a bad deal, but it's hard for them to have a contract that size amongst some other bad ones. And if they sign Aaron Judge to a massive deal, and I don't see why Cashman won't, I think they're going to be handcuffed financially. So it's just hard for me to see the Red Sox and the Yankees being on that same trajectory that they were when they were kind of at the peak of their trajectories in 2004. To have that in the coming seasons, I just think they're going to be going in different directions. I think the Padres-Dodgers is going to be the rivalry of the decade.
Oh, yeah.
If you ask me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. With all the Tatis and the Machado and, you know, Mookie and, you know, Bellinger, I agree. But we're here to talk Red Sox. I didn't want to go too far off the page there, Terry, but I wanted to get just a little bit of your feeling on the Yankees. I always love it when I get a Boston guy or a New York guy on my podcast. I got to get that feeling because I love the energy that someone has about, you know, the hate towards New York or the hate towards Boston. I had to get that in there just real quick. But let's talk about these new additions to this Red Sox team, because that's what we're here for, right? We want to know what's going on. We want to see what the season preview is April 1st when opening day rolls around. Who's going to be out there for the Boston Red Sox? With the new additions here, obviously we've seen some, you know, we talked about, you know, issues with the rotation. Who knows if Chris Sale is going to be healthy. You brought in a guy in your bullpen from New York in a rare trade with the Yankees, Adam Ottavino. He comes over. I got to hear about your thoughts on the entire rotation first, and then I'd love to know your thoughts on the bullpen, especially with your closer, Matt Barnes.
Yeah, all right. Well, Chris Sale's going to be healthy. I'm 100% confident that when he comes back, he's going to be healthy. It's just how rusty is he going to be? And one of his big problems in 2019 before he got hurt was he has two out pitches, his slider down and in, which he does get outs with still, but then his fastball up and away typically is not a strike, but he would still get a lot of strikeouts on it prior to 2019. However, in 2019, other batters stopped swinging at it, and that led to his walk rate going up. So he's going to have to possibly reinvent himself as far as getting guys out, aside from his slider down and in. So that's something we're going to be watching for when he does come back. Eduardo Rodriguez, I guess, would be the de facto ace of the staff, and he's probably a number three on most rotations. He had COVID last year, had a heart ailment as an after effect of COVID called myocarditis, has a clean bill of health, but where he hasn't pitched since 2019, there could be rust there. He always had issues with inconsistency anyway. He'd get the pitch count way up by the fifth inning, have to come out. So we're just kind of hoping he gets off on the right foot. Nathan Eovaldi, another guy who's been up and down, he can go on a 3-4-5 start tear where he's just absolutely lights out, and then he'll get knocked around the next 4 or 5 starts. And then he's an automatic month or two on the disabled list or injured list. I still haven't gotten used to that. So it's far-fetched to me that we'll get more than 100, 120 innings from Eovaldi. And then as you go further down the rotation, you have Garrett Richards. I hated that signing. It was one of the biggest signings for the Red Sox. He's only pitched 76 innings since, 2016. So in 4 or 5 years to have that few of innings, it's a little tough to try to have any high expectations from a guy like Richards. He is coming off of Tommy John, basically pitched the full 2 months last year, but had control issues, was relegated to the bullpen. I'm extremely frustrated that Bloom went that route instead of a guy like Taijuan Walker, who I know isn't going to blow anyone away, but is healthy, probably would pitch 150-plus innings. Jake Odorizzi would have been a great addition. He hasn't even been signed yet, so that's a little puzzling. But then, just not to drag it on too far, the rest of the rotation, you're probably going to have Tanner Houck at some point. He will start the year in AAA Worcester. Nick Pivetta, who I mentioned earlier, probably might have a full-time spot in the rotation, barring bad performance. Martin Perez is kind of a career number 4 guy. He's back with the Red Sox. Probably will pitch close to 200 innings, but again, more of a back of the rotation guy. So the rotation, not that impressive. Do you want thoughts there? I can go right into the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, we can just, bring it up real quick with this rotation. Obviously it does going to rely on the health of Chris Sale. I mean, you named a lot of players there that are more than 5. So you're going to see a solid, 1-5 rotation. Definitely going to be some transitioning players out. I completely agree with you. But Chris Sale, you're saying it. I'm taking your word for that. Hopefully it's true that he'll be healthy for that season. Hopefully he can stay healthy. He is dynamic when he is. Hopefully he comes back better and stronger than ever from that injury, because he was lights out before it happened with Chicago when he was with the White Sox, and obviously in Boston. But yeah, let me transition over to this bullpen. Obviously, Adam Ottavino coming over. You still got guys like Ryan Brazier, and then your closer, Matt Barnes, is your closer. That's a very interesting thing. I got to know what you think about that. Is that something that you see as a consistency as your anchor point for years to come?
Matt Barnes is the popular pick right now to be the closer amongst the fans and the beat writers. I'm a huge critic of that. I mean, this is going to be his 8th year in the league. He's never really been able to hold down a defined role, whether it was more of an 8th inning guy. He was up and down last year in the 9th inning role. There's a chance he could be the 4th or 5th best reliever in that bullpen. I think Adam Ottavino is the best. And granted, he hasn't really been a closer, but there's been several seasons where he's at least been solid from start to finish. Nobody else in this Red Sox bullpen has ever been that good, that consistent. Ryan Brazier has been good in 2 of the last 3 years, 2019 being the year he wasn't that great, but kind of had a resurgence last year. He could pitch some high leverage innings. I don't know if that's necessarily in the 9th inning, but it wouldn't shock me if he had a better year than Matt Barnes. And it's the expectation of most of the fan base that Darwin's and Hernandez will be the long-term closer of the future. He hasn't been consistent, but he hasn't really had an opportunity to get off on the right foot, because last season he had COVID early on. And then the season before, he was still kind of projected to be a starter, but had this insane walk rate in Double A. They finally, you know, came to their senses and said, okay, this guy's going to be better suited for the bullpen. So this will be the first spring training that Hernandez can just go in with that mindset and then, you know, hopefully come out of the gates on the right foot. But when the season finally gets into May, June, I think he's going to be the guy, but apparently it might be Barnes to start with, which I'm not thrilled with.
Skepticism and optimism at the same time. Spoken like a true baseball fan, my friend. I like it. I'm here with one of the storytellers of the 2021 Boston Red Sox, Terry Cushman Jr. Find him on Twitter at CushmanMLB. Terry, I got to ask you, we're moving on from, you know, the pitchers. We're going to the offense. You moved from Mookie last year. He goes to Los Angeles. And then another guy who was, the team was so high on for years, a top round pick, he ships off. And that's Benintendi. He moves on to the Kansas City Royals. You get a handful of people come back. One of them is Franchy Cordero. That outfield is still a pretty fun outfield to look at. Obviously, you get Hunter Renfro, who came over from San Diego, then Tampa, then to Boston. I like Hunter Renfro. He's actually the first person I have seen a grand slam in person was Hunter Renfro. So he's got a little piece of my heart for Hunter Renfro. So I'm cheering on for him. Obviously, Alex Verdugo is the person, the player that everybody thinks has to fill the shoes of Mookie. Let's start off with that outfield. Your thoughts about that outfield and what needs to happen for that success to turn around to get yourself out of the basement in the AL East.
Well, before I do get to that, was that grand slam by Renfro, did that also happen to be a walk-off?
Unfortunately, no, but I have seen some of those. So this one was Memorial Day weekend or Veterans Day weekend. They're wearing their military outfits, and it was in San Diego. It was against the San Francisco Giants. It was a very, very cool grand slam. I was with a couple of my buddies, and I actually looked at one of my buddies and told him, you know, whenever I've never seen a grand slam, so whoever gets a grand slam first, and I get to see it in person, I'm buying their jersey. And he reminds me every time we see each other and have beers that I have yet to buy that jersey. So I got to probably get on eBay and I got to buy a Hunter Renfro jersey. I think it's got to be a Padres one, though, because that's what he hit it in. So I probably could find one at a pretty decent price since it's his, you know, third team removed now. But yeah, I'm really, it's a fun story. I'll never forget it. Hunter Renfro. But yeah, what about this outfield?
All right. So as you mentioned, we do have Renfro. I wasn't crazy about that acquisition because he doesn't hit for average very well. I think he's a career 230 something guy. His career on base percentage is also less than 300. So if he were like a fourth outfielder, I wouldn't have minded it quite as much, but he's coming into an outfield that has Alex Verdugo. And then at the time we had Benintendi, but I wasn't optimistic. Benintendi might not be in Major League Baseball after this season. Like, the regression was just so intense. So with the outfield, we do have Verdugo, Renfro. I think you're going to see Kike Hernandez getting a lot of time out there. Admittedly, I'm not too familiar with Franchy Cordero. I know he's got a bit of an injury history, and that's kind of what's hampered him throughout his career, but he does have power. So if he gets, you know, if he can kind of sustain a good run of health, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how he develops. But this is far from the outfield that we've had in years past when we were winning championships. So it is a concern of mine this season, unfortunately.
Let's talk about someone who is normally in the field, but off, you know, plays DH as well. And that's JD Martinez. He had a weird season last year. And a lot of that is because of the COVID protocols. He was unable to utilize in the bench in the dugout when he's not at bat watching his, you know, passed at bats on iPads and electrical devices, and they didn't allow him to do that. It really messed with his play last year. Moving forward, we might still see some of those COVID things in play. You think that's still going to mess with him, or you think he's found ways around it? I haven't really seen anything news-wise, maybe you have, since that time around. But J.D. Martinez, a lot of money put into this player from the Boston Red Sox, and a lot of, you know, hope. A lot of people thought he also might get traded last year, but he held on. Your thoughts about J.D. and maybe a successful 2021?
Well, the video room is back, and there's going to be, like, restrictions in place, so that – it's going to be hard to cheat, so to speak. So I don't know if the new format is going to be beneficial to a guy like JD. One of the things I was concerned about with him was he didn't quite seem to have the bat speed. So for a guy approaching his mid 30s, that's a bit of a concern. You can chalk it up to a off season. A bad season, I guess. That's kind of what we're hoping it was. And with Alex Cora back, and the vibe seems to be positive. A lot of these guys are motivated, and the culture seems pretty good by all accounts from everybody covering the team right now. So we're just kind of hoping JD does have a bit of a bounce back. Another thing he was doing that kind of frustrated a lot of us was he'd be prone to striking out on balls that were low and away, whether they were sliders or whatnot. He would just kind of have this lazy swing, and a lot of times that would result in strike three. So just hoping he's a little bit sharper, kind of returns to 2018 would be great, but he was still pretty good in 2019. Just, we need him to be the solid middle of the order bat he has been to give a guy like Devers protection. So it's another thing we're going to be watching very closely, but there is a little bit of concern.
A lot of expectations for sure with this outfield, with these offenses, bats in general. So let me just transition expect in general for this entire season. I talk about this infield. One of the ones I'm really interested to hear your opinion about is Kike Hernandez coming over from the Dodgers to maybe mostly being your starting second base. He was a very quality role player on that World Series team. I'm interested to see how he's going to run the infield and be more of an everyday starter. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that one with Enrique Hernandez coming over from second base.
You know, I really think Christian Arroyo is going to emerge as a viable second baseman. And with my concerns in the outfield, I think Hernandez is going to kind of shore up that part of the team. But if I'm wrong, I mean, he's a Swiss Army knife. He can be used anywhere, and I think naturally he is a middle infielder. But, I mean, having a guy like Hernandez and Bogarts playing side-by-side, I mean, I think that's a great, you know, up the middle. So he was a fun player to watch with the Dodgers. He's not going to wow you, you know, with power. He's a career 260, 270 guy. So just a solid role player that you can really rely on. He's durable, which is good. And I think that's why Heim Bloom, you know, kind of honed in on him. And I think he's going to give the team a lot of stability.
Now that I got you in this, you know, predicament here, we're talking about the entire team as a whole. I want to know your expectations for 2021. And what I mean by that, I want to know what is really going to happen with this ball club. We know that they gotta go, you know, improve from where they were at last season. Obviously, they're in the you know, the basement of the AL East. Do we think that's still going to happen? I mean, I personally don't, but I'd like to hear your opinion. I'd like to know your expectations for this 162. Hopefully, I'm going to keep saying it until it happens. Knock on wood and everything. 162. We are going to get 162. So what's your expectations?
I have no doubt we're getting 162. But my expectation, and I do have four other co-hosts, and it's kind of a mixed bag. But with me specifically, I'm more on the pessimistic. And we do have one co-host that's way on the pessimistic end. You need like a space shuttle to get to where he is. But But I kind of think the Red Sox are about a 78-win team, unfortunately. If the stars align, and you'd have to align most of the stars in the universe, I mean, you could potentially win 90, and that might be good enough to win a division, because I think every team in this division has flaws. Toronto is sexy, but I don't like their rotation. I think the Yankees might have problems with their rotation, especially if Kluber kind of flames out. The Rays have Archer back, which is interesting. They brought in Michael Wacha. And if those two are going to kind of have a resurgence, it would be on a pitching program like Tampa's. So there's no team that's really a bona fide, surefire division winner. So if I'm wrong and the Red Sox do exceed my expectations, you know, maybe the stars will align, but you need the rotation to be durable. You need a guy like Nick Pivetta to have the best season of his career. The offense has to be, I don't want to say robust, but they have to be adequate. You need Devers, Bogarts, and Bogarts has a shoulder thing right now, which doesn't seem to be serious, but you never know. Teams love to lie and, you know, play kind of chess a little bit with the media this time of year. So I just feel like it's asking a lot to get the Red Sox into a playoff spot, even a wild card spot. And we've won 4 championships in the last 17 years. So we know what a championship team looks like. And this does not resemble that. And quite frankly, we've had better teams on paper than this finish last in the last several years. So that's kind of where I'm at. I hope I'm wrong. You know, being a content creator like you are, my numbers will be better with the podcast if the team is better, but the realist in me just doesn't quite see it with the roster that they have right now.
All right. So I take it you're sticking with your guns here. You're not going to hope that stars align, because the DraftKings, you know, according to DraftKings Sportsbook, sponsored by DraftKings Nation, DK Nation, the win total for the Boston Red Sox is 80.5 wins. That puts them 15 games back from the AL East division win. So you said 78. I did hear a 90 in there once, so I just want to make sure we're on the same page. 80.5, is that too high or too low?
I'm at 78, so I mean, 80.5 is in the ballpark, you know, from where I am, and it's certainly possible.
All right. One thing before I get you to go, Terry, is I got to know, what is one bold prediction for the Red Sox this season? Could be the team in whole, could be a player you got in mind. I'd love to hear one bold prediction so we can hold on to it. And when I get you back on here later on sometime this season, we can bring it back and we can laugh at it, or maybe say, hey, I told you so. One of the two things I'd love to hear, a bold prediction from Terry Cushman Jr.
I think Tanner Houck is going to be an absolute stud, and he's going to start the year in AAA. They need to develop a third pitch for him. And he's more of a fastball slider guy right now. So if that's, you know, ends up being a changeup or whatever, that's what it's going to take to get him on the roster. And I think there's enough question marks in that rotation for him to easily find a spot when they think he's ready to come up. So I think he's going to be the talk of the division and maybe the talk of the league this year. Everybody's going to know who Tanner Houck is by the end of it.
I like it. Not a lot of people know who that is right now. So I dig that. That's bold. Not usually the kind of bold statements that I've heard so far, but that's a good one. I'm holding you to it. So hopefully we don't laugh about it here certainly soon. Hopefully you can tell me I told you so. Terry Cushman, everyone, thanks for joining here at the Bringing the Heat podcast. He's a Red Sox podcaster for the Bastards of Boston Baseball. They just had episode 256. They are crushing it. You can find him at Cushman MLB, and you can find his podcast at Bastards_Boston. Terry, anything you got coming out that you'd like to let all the listeners know, or anything you'd like to bring up before we head out?
we're just kind of going through the motions of spring training at this point. The blockbuster signings are done, so we're just kind of just watching the day-to-day. But once the season starts, we kind of have a format we follow, and we do have a lot of listeners from outside the fan base that love listening to us. So if you got a lot of time on your hands, I drive a truck during the day locally, so I'm big on podcasts, so I'm always looking for something new. And if anyone in the audience is, once they're all caught up on your shows, that is, I think we definitely put out an entertaining product. So appreciate you having me on.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Give these guys a listen. Again, you can find them at Bastards_Boston. Hey, Terry, thank you so much for joining.
And that'll do it for us here at the Bringing the Heat podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We will be back tomorrow to talk about what I still think is, you know, Terry might not think otherwise, but what I still think is the biggest rivalry in baseball. It's the other side. We're going to talk about the New York Yankees. But until then, I will see you back here tomorrow. Take care.